This is UN and Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Deanne Penn. In this week's program, why negotiations are the only way to achieve peace in Darfur. And time for action against illegal wildlife trade in Africa. But first, widespread and systematic crimes against humanity have been committed in Eritrea since it gained independence in 1991, for which the perpetrators should face international justice, leading UN human rights investigators have said. The recommendation is just one of 40 made by a UN probe into human rights in the Horn of Africa country in response to hundreds of testimonies from expatriate Eritreans indicating offenses ranging from unending national service to arbitrary execution. The Eritrean government has denied the report's findings ahead of its presentation at the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva, describing them as sensational and patently false. Daniel Johnson reports from Geneva.
25 years after Eritrea gained independence, crimes of enslavement, imprisonment, torture and worse continue throughout the country. Those are the findings of a new report on Eritrea requested by the UN Human Rights Council. Mike Smith chaired the Commission of Inquiry Investigation.
The use of arbitrary detention is and has been rampant across Eritrea. It is not only reserved for critics of the government. The vast majority of those detained said they had not been brought before a judge, tried, or involved in any form of judicial proceeding whatsoever. And most former detainees described widespread torture.
One of the issues highlighted by the probe related to Eritrea's policy of national service, which investigators described as unending and the main reason why people left the country. Human rights investigator Mike Smith said that almost everyone pressed into national or military service endured hard physical labour, while some had to wait years before they got permission to go home. He said that between 300,000 and 400,000 people have been enslaved in this way. Facing questions about the report's accuracy, given the lack of apparent restrictions observed by foreign journalists in the Eritrean capital Asmara, Mr. Smith replied that the abuses happened elsewhere.
So long as there is no constitution, so long as there is no free press, where there are no serious NGOs, except government ones, where there is no political opposition, where there is no parliament even, where you can debate national questions. In these circumstances, look, you can deny as much as you like, but how believable are those denials in a situation such as that?
In response to the report, an Eritrean government spokesperson described its findings as patently false, while confirming that the human rights investigators had not been given access to the country. Speaking to journalists in Geneva, Yemani Gabrib questioned the methodology and objectivity of the report's authors, saying they'd overstepped their mandate. And he added that almost 90% of those in national service worked as mainly teachers and health personnel, while emigration was declining as the country's economic fortunes improved. Daniel Johnson, United Nations, Geneva.
Peace in the Darfur region of Sudan can only be achieved through negotiations, not through military operations. That's according to Kingsley Mamabolo, a representative from the UN mission in Darfur, UNAMID. Mr. Mamabolo recently met with government officials, community leaders and internally displaced people during a three-day visit to the area. He spoke with Adam Ahmed about UNAMID's mandate.
I think the issues that came related more to, particularly from the community security issues, the question of the need to continue to protect civilians, the need to ensure that UNAMID is allowed to have as much possibility to participate as possible. We have, as UNAMID, also made a point to the government, the Walis, even here in Sector Central, of the need to ensure that even those areas like Jebel Mara, where there is absolutely or sometimes difficult access to humanitarian teams, to UNAMID and everybody, that these are opened up.
Did you find out any progress?
Well, we had a lengthy discussion with the Wali here, and we reiterated our request again that we should be allowed to move in there. The Wali was saying to us he is himself going there. I think the indication, even though he did not say so in so many words, is that it may be easy in the near future, because the fact that he is going to be there, stationed there for some time, and as you know, the World Food Program, which is a United Nations-backed agency, is already given access to go and see what it can do there in terms of humanitarian needs. They will be protected by UNAMID going over there. We are hoping that all these are indications and signs that it might be possible to move to the Jebel Marra in not so distant future.
And you have also visited Hisa camp, and IDPs are talking about lasting peace and lasting solution to the problem. What are you going to do to meet that?
Well, yes, I think the emphasis to the people in Hisa was to say that what is important, the root cause of the problem is lack of peace and the conflict that is ongoing. You need to find ways. They need to be saying to all their leaders, you need to find a way in which you discuss issues. Eventually, peace, a lasting peace, is going to be through negotiations, not going to be through military operations. Military operations, yes, you can defeat a person, but in the long run, you also need to be able to sit down, and then we can find an accommodation, a win-win situation, if you like.
The time for action against illegal wildlife trade in Africa is now, the Africa director of the UN Environment Programme, UNEP, has said. Angola was the host of this year's World Environment Day celebrations, observed annually on the 5th of June. The country has been seeking to restore its elephant herds and has launched a string of initiatives to enhance conservation and stiffen law enforcement, all while continuing to rebuild after more than a quarter century of civil war. Eleuterio Givan asked UNEP's Juliet Kude Nokpu how she felt about having the event held on African soil.
Having Africa to host this World Environmental Day on this thematic on combating illegal wildlife trade, I think is a kind of fairness. It's a kind of fairness because when you talk about wildlife, I think Africa is the region that really hosts a huge numbers of wild species. When we talk about elephant, it's in Africa. When we talk about rhino, it is in Africa. When we talk about chimpanzees, it's in Africa. At the same time, it is in Africa that these icon species are disappearing. So it is really great that Africa is hosting that to really raise awareness on this crime that is becoming really a global crime.
So what changes are desirable for the continent in terms of protecting wildlife from now on?
The changes that are needed, all of African governments are really keen to combat this illegal trade in wildlife. There are some resolutions that have been already in place at African level, including the common strategy on combating illegal trade in wildlife that have been approved by the African Ministerial Conference at its sixth special session, which also is mobilizing the African Union. But time is now for action. We have all this framework in place, but we have to get into action. We need to really go to law enforcement. We need also data, because we don't really know the white fact and figures. What we are seeing, what we are talking about, may be the tip of the iceberg. We need data. We also need really to really work on the demand side, because driven by the growing demand, this illegal trade in wildlife is really escalating and turning to be a global crisis. So how do we work on the demand side? I think it is really important.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN and Africa. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Deanne Penn.